It's Lucy Litch, and this is Tiny House Conversations. It's the Australian-based podcast where I interview experienced tiny houses, tiny builders, and adventurers in the tiny world so you can discover how to create, build, and transition into tiny life. Welcome back to another episode of Tiny House Conversations. Joining me on the show today is Faye Barrett, who is a co-founder and co-organizer of the Tiny Homes Expo, Australia's largest tiny house events, where you can walk through many different tiny homes, you can meet tiny builders and other aligning businesses, and you can also learn lots about tiny house living through the experienced speakers and experts in the Australian tiny house space. And in this conversation, we talk about the evolution of the Tiny Homes Expo from the first show until now, Faye's view on why it's so complicated and a lengthy process for tiny houses on wheels to have clear guidelines and regulations across the board. There was also lots and lots of council talk, including some behind the scenes that Faye shares about her dealings with several councils. We also talked about how you can advocate for tiny homes in your local area and community. Faye also shares some positive stories about people living in tiny homes and how it has literally changed their lives and so much more. Now, Faye's in a really unique position with the Tiny Homes Expos because she has conversations and access to, on a daily basis, many different tiny home builders, many different council members, including town planners, other aligning businesses within the tiny house space, such as around composting toilets, solar systems, wastewater management, tiny towing. And she's a wealth of knowledge as a result of all of this. And I feel like there's so much gold in this episode. And if you're particularly interested around the whole council side of things, you'll definitely want to tune in. So let's not wait any longer. On to this tiny house conversation with Faye. Hi, Faye. Thank you so much for being here on Tiny House Conversations. It's so good to have you.
Hi, Lucy. How are you going?
So good. How are you?
Good. Very hot up here in Queensland where I'm working at the moment.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Now, before we started recording, I was saying to you that I've wanted to talk to you for ages. I wanted to talk to you back in season one, probably a couple of years ago, right? So I'm so excited that we're able to make this happen today. And you're the organizer and the creator of the Tiny Homes Expos here in Australia. I would love to know, before we dive into a bit more about the expos, is to just understand your story and how did you even come into the tiny house world? Where did your story start?
A long time ago, 2014 would have been when I was like first seeing tiny homes. I was a single mum with two children, and everything I ever did to try and house myself was always difficult. Whilst we've got a housing crisis in Australia now, I live on the Sunshine Coast and we've had a housing crisis for as long as I can remember. And so I came across them quite a while ago, but I happened to work for a really good friend of mine, Lance, who is an event organizer, and he had this company, he still does, called Big Boys Toys. And I was like, marketing for him. And I'd been thinking about it for quite a while, going, these tiny homes, you know, and I've done a lot of research on it. I wouldn't say I pitched it to him, but I kind of went and said to him, look, I've got this idea. It's a bit, you know, like this, something other. At the time, which is back in 2018, he patted me on the head and said, I'll help you with your little hippie show if you like. Because I think that's really what he thought it would be. So he's had a real awakening to the tiny home movement, because, of course, from day dot when we first did in 2021, it's never been a little hippie show, that's for sure. It's quite the opposite. He's been absolutely stunned at its success. Wow. And I think we had great timing as well for coming to Australia with the whole package.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if Lance is eating his words now or like having to hear that, oh, I told you so.
I tease him about that all the time.
Okay? Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. I think you're right. I feel like you guys came in such a good time, because even I think right before 2020, I know for me it was like 2019 when I first went to a tiny house event. It wasn't yours. I think it was just before. Well, actually, I'm not sure.
when your first one was. Maybe we can talk about that. But 2019, and then sort of since then, it's just grown so much, and there's so many more builders, and there's so many more people looking into living in tiny homes, especially for the long term. So I think you guys definitely came in at a great time. And I'm wondering what it was like that first Tiny Homes Expo that you had. Is that up where you live on the in Queensland that you did the first one?
Well, we call that our flagship show.
And, so what was the first one like?
It was hell. It was in the middle of 2021. We'd already had to postpone it a couple of months because of a lockdown. And then there was a big outbreak. The houses had arrived and were setting up in the field, and there's an outbreak, and we are so going to be shut down. We know it. Everyone else knows it. Event organisers like had a portal, if you like. We had to do these massive plans and involve Queensland Health and everything else. And we know that we're going to be shut down. However, the footy was on. The footy was on that weekend, and they were going to shut down events. They had to shut down the footy. So that first Tiny Home Expo was saved only by the footy. I think the lockdown was on Monday, just after we finished.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, wow. How's that for your first Tiny Home Expo in the middle of a pandemic?
A lot of the houses got stuck over the border. They weren't allowed to cross the border. So it was a little bit smaller, especially in compared to how they run today. I think getting that one up and going was really intricate to the success that the rest of them have had, and we've grown, you know, as we've gone forward. I think the other thing that was interesting is that I think a lot of people would have come to those first expos and gone, you know, just like I said about Lance, oh wow, it wasn't a little hippie show. It was it was quite a big show, and the audience for Tiny Homes is broadening. And without a doubt, some of the people that came and visited in 2021 came back in 2022 or 2023 as builders or as suppliers to the market or involved in the market in some way.
I'm so curious about sort of the journey of you just described the first one, and then, you know, you've been running them for a few years now, and you're sort of, I'm sure there's so many things that you learn along the way, and you're having to adapt because of the growth of the industry, whether it's new builders coming on board, whether it's different demographics of people, and then also the education aspect. So are you able to just let us know if someone was curious and maybe they've never been to a Tiny Homes Expo, and maybe they've even just started to hear about this thing called a tiny house, what can they expect if they're going to come to an expo today?
Well, for one, they're going to see a lot more tiny houses because there are a lot more builders. I can give you statistics. I've got no problems in telling you that when I presented Lance with those statistics at the beginning, I found 39 builders in the whole of Australia. I can guarantee you that right now we've got well over 300 tiny home builders in Australia. So that's the kind of growth between 2018-19 to the beginning of 2024. And I can also tell you that give or take a week or two, never a week has gone by without a new builder phoning me up. In fact, just before this podcast call, I got a phone call going, hi, I've just seen an ad and, you know, we've just started out and I just see that you've got these expos and how does it work? And that will be almost a daily phone call, you know, that I will get a call like that. So a lot of people are very attracted. One of the reasons why they're attracted is because, and I love this story, I've got this wonderful exhibitor in New South Wales. And he has been a builder his whole life, doing renovations, kitchen renovations and stuff like that. He'd been looking at tiny houses, but just thought people wouldn't want them. Found out about the expo, phoned me up. I said, do people want them? And I said, boy, oh boy, yes, they do want them. And he transitioned. And one of the reasons why he transitioned to doing tiny houses from what he was doing is because he could never get his sons involved. And he always wanted to be such and such and sons. And they came and got involved, and it's young and it's hip. And the other thing they love about it is that they can be way more creative. He said, I've done the same renovations. And he said, I wish I'd done this 10 years earlier. And he comes to all the, I think he's a New South Wales person. So he comes to all the New South Wales ones, and his sons are involved as well. And he's just, you know, really happy, and he gets to be way more creative with what he can do. He just loves it as a builder. It's given him a new lease of life.
Yeah. And I hear that a lot too from just speaking to different builders. And I know that a lot of them come to the tiny house space. Some of them were builders for a really long time, maybe doing residential or commercial or other things, other types of buildings, and then sort of transitioning to tiny homes. And then I'm also noticing there's, and that, you know, there's some of the builders I think that you know, or the building companies that you know, where you've got the project managers, and then they're bringing in licensed professionals to do all the building and all of that. I'm curious about, are you seeing like different trends of where different tiny or new tiny house builders are coming from, like different sort of coming into the space for different sorts of reasons? So you talked about like that example there of renovators, and what else are you seeing when it comes to new tiny house builders coming on board, and from where and for different reasons?
I think there's a lot of intrigue from bigger companies that are looking at doing tiny homes, although there's not that many that have actually transitioned, because they need to understand the market. And at the end of the day, it comes from the tiny home movement, and people that come in from big firms to the tiny home industry, they're not aware of that movement so much. Whereas your builders who are what I would call a husband and wife team, you know, that really understand the movement, they sort of like come in and they come up through that movement, and they understand the customer, they understand the values of tiny houses, they understand the ethos of tiny houses. And I feel that they do really well, because they understand where people are coming from. In saying that, the market's really changed as well. So it would have been mainly the tiny home movement. People wanted to be more sustainable, less staff, more freedom, all those reasons that people were obviously thinking about a lot during COVID, which was when I would say, you know, I'm going to call it a boom, although I don't like that word, but tiny homes boom, yeah, just after COVID, as people were rethinking their lifestyles. But the reality is that after all the, you know, COVID boom, there is what we're now seeing as housing shortage, rental crisis. And out of that, unfortunately, has been born a new market of people that are literally looking for just a small house because they can't afford a big one. And there's a lot of education that goes into that. You would understand that as somebody who lives in a tiny house. You can't just walk up to a builder and go, you know, I want this big mansion. Can you just shrink it down and, you know, it'll be a bit less money? It's not quite how it works. It's actually there's a whole lifestyle aspect to it. And so I love the fact that they can come to one place and look at so many things. So many people have it in their mind what they think they want and come to an expo and are quite shocked at what they're leaving and with, I know exactly what I want, and it wasn't at all what they came to the expo with. For anybody that's never seen tiny houses before, it's absolutely fascinating to them. But it also really helps firm up the reality of what tiny home living is.
You're right. Like there's definitely been, I think it's just a sign of what's happening in the movement, just in an overall sense. Maybe I'm just thinking about this actually as we're talking, maybe the Tiny Homes Expo is a microcosm of the macro that's happening just in Australia wide, right? And also the world, what's happening in tiny houses. I'm curious because you talk there about like the different demographics of people. I feel like one of the Tiny Homes Expos that I came to of yours, I can't remember which year it was, but I was helping Bri at the Park My Tiny House stand, and I remember speaking to so many people, and there was a mixture of, so there was long-term people, like long-term living people, there was also landowners looking into like the Airbnb side of things. But now, of course, we're seeing, as what you mentioned before, there's more need and necessity for long-term living, and a wider demographic of people are looking at tiny homes that maybe weren't before, or that didn't know that it was an actual option for them, and they're doing it out of necessity. So I'm curious sort of what you're seeing when it comes to the attendees of people living and wanting to live in a tiny home versus even landowners wanting to offer a space for someone to live in a tiny home or to park their tiny home. Do you know, like, have a rough idea, or is that sort of hard to gauge?
It is hard to gauge. I do know, speaking to builders, that tiny homes built for Airbnb sell well. There you go. They sell well, and they sell well because they're always the most luxurious ones. They don't have to have lots and lots and lots of storage options because they're going to be used just for the weekend. And so they can really, really look good. And people certainly come to the expo with the idea of doing that. The issue that I have, because some people are like, oh, you know, Airbnb, it's almost like it's becoming like a bit of a dirty word. But the reality is that the councils are what made that so easy. The councils have made it very easy for someone to come and buy a tiny home for Airbnb purposes, set up, no problems at all. No one's living in it full time, so they can have their temporary starters, which is what the councils seem to be putting on a lot of councils seem to be putting on tiny houses. So it's very easy for them. For the person that wants to live in a tiny house, it's actually harder. And in the situation that Australia is in right now, that's pretty disgusting, that they're making it easier for more Airbnb and not for people that physically want to live in them long term. And that's something I think, you know, that needs to be addressed with the advocacy for sure. We get a lot of landowners. I remember at the beginning of last year, I was just inundated with people calling saying, you know, I was going to come to your expo, I've got land. Something where you'd think it'd be difficult to get somebody, people really do want to be part of it, and they've got a house and they've got plenty of land and they're more than happy to have a tiny house on their land. I know just from my local community notice boards outside of the tiny home world that a lot of people are more than happy to, you know, to rent and share land to do tiny home setups. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, I do too. And there's no shortage of land across our beautiful country, right? It's just an uneven distribution of it. And such a great use of it in many ways too, where we could have so much more housing, right? And just to circle, so I want to bookmark the council thing. We're definitely going to come back to that. But I would love to just go back to, so we're talking about specifically at the Tiny Homes Expos. I'm curious these days, I know that the amount of display homes you have might differ depending on the location, you know, where it is and just what's happening at the time. But in general, if someone was to come to a Tiny Homes Expo, how many display homes can they potentially see?
A smallest expo usually is one that that we go to that would be like the first time we've ever been to that area. So South Australia, for instance, we only had about 24, I'm going to say. I could be off by one or two, but I think it's 24 buildings were there. And that very first tiny home expo that I talked about, because nine of them were stuck over the border, I think we only had 19 there, whereas this year in Brisbane we had 64, and I believe in the very next one, Mornington Tiny Home Expo, I think the last count, I lost count, but I believe it's sitting at 54.
That's 54 great.
In New South Wales 2023. Regional shows like Toowoomba and Fraser Coast, they will probably have about 30. So usually between 30 and good. All the way, you know, all the way up. It's a good one of the things that people wouldn't know that I do is I have a sheet and I call it the mix, and I try and make sure that I have a good mix of houses. There'll be some modulars, there'll be some imported prefabs, there'll be tiny houses on wheels, there'll be tiny houses off wheels, and an element of DIY as well. So a frame and a trailer. And that way, I think variety is really what I want to make sure that I get. If you know, rather than just have all the same things, you know, just one after the other, and there's not a lot of difference. Because some of those, particularly the imported prefabs, they would all just be the same. You just have rows and rows of them. So we limit how many of those, for instance, can come to the expos. We just have some of them representing prefabs. But, you know, try and keep the variety up rather than just as many houses as we can possibly get. But we do have to get a certain amount of houses, because otherwise how many houses there are depends on how many people we can let through the gate. Otherwise we're just going to end up with a great big queue session and everyone's going to be kicked off.
Yeah, I think that's fair to the builders that are there too, because obviously, like, you know, tiny home builders, they are technically in competition with each other. Although one thing I've found that's really beautiful, and you probably agree because you're there all the time, but they're all very collaborative and supportive of each other at the same time. At least most of them are, right? That I my experience of that. And that there's enough for everyone anyway. Like every builder has a different style, different experience, different focus on what they offer, and you know, all sorts of things. So I feel like there is something for everyone, but I really like that you try and bring that variety for people. And I have also seen like there's other things, other businesses there, and vendors that also have businesses related to tiny homes. So whether it's like solar trailers, and I've seen other. Yeah, maybe you can let us know a bit about some of those other businesses that people might see, that they're composting toilets and other things too.
The toilets are really interesting because when I first started doing the Tiny Home Expo, I told friends and I said, oh, I'm going to do this expo. It's the Tiny Home Expo. Where'd you go to the toilet? That's all I ever got asked was about toilets. And I remember thinking, gosh, I better get some toilets for this expo because it's all people seem to want to know. And so I've got composting toilets and incinerating the incinerator toilet. The Cinderella comes to the expos as well. Yeah, I think that's really important because, you know, there's an element of off-grid with tiny houses. Not all of them are off-grid, we know that, but I think it's definitely worthwhile having off-grid elements to your tiny homes, and you've just got ease of where you're going to put them. And so we've always got solar toilets, but there's more. There's land finding services. And usually around the speaker area, I try and put things. For instance, we've got the more and more co-housing community that they'll be coming and giving out information about co-housing, where they have a village of, I think it's not just tiny houses that they have at their village. But so yeah, those are really interesting people to speak to. And I think people come in, they see the houses, they go, wow, and they want to go and see all the lovely houses, and they forget that around the speaker area there are information stores that are really helpful, and you could find your people there. You really could find, you could find the thing that you haven't been thinking about, and there's gold nuggets there. They're never hard to find. They're usually up around wherever the speaker area is. Then we're getting more and more people that got suppliers that they think would be useful to people that are buying tiny houses, but also what I'm hoping to get a little bit more of, but we're getting there, is more DIY. Some people would like to DIY. That's your trailers, your frames, cladding, and we have bathroom companies where you can slot a whole bathroom in. More of that is coming on board. The folding staircases and ladders, they're coming to New South Wales Expo. So it's picking up traction along those lines as well, which will be interesting to see as it goes forwards.
Oh, the folding staircases and ladders, that's great. Yeah, and what about, do you want to let people know just a bit more about like the speaking aspect of it? Because it is that there's a big educational aspect too, and there's speakers that are on all day. So some of the different topics that people might expect to learn about through the speakers that are there.
Just taking a quick break from the conversation to let you know, I'm now offering tiny house consulting. I get questions all the time about tiny house living and have lots to share from my own personal experiences of going through the design process of building a tiny, finding the right builder for me, living in a tiny home, as well as through speaking with guests on the show and beyond. So if you have questions about your specific situation and you want to dive deeper into where to start, preparing to transition into tiny living, how to find a parking space for your home, or talking through what some of the best options could be for you when it comes to creating your dream tiny life, just know that I'm here for you. You can head over to tinyhouseconversations.com/consult. I'd love to help you on your tiny journey. Now, back to the show.
We try and keep the speaker hall itself as informative as possible for people that are looking to live tiny. So we talk about the solar and the toilets, because it's always been a big question. We have Bryony Lover for talking to people about finding land. And I think so many people, you'll see on the comments of any Tiny Home Expo post and any other forum as well, as soon as you go, oh, wow, you know, tiny houses, they go, yeah, but where do you park them? I can't afford the land. So, you know, having that explained that you don't necessarily have to have a great big block of land in order to have a tiny house. Then this year as well, I'm really excited about this guy, and I find him hard to explain. He's the ex-mayor of Adelaide, and he's a town planner. His name's Stephen Yardwood, and he calls himself a futurist. But the fact that he's a town planner and he understands all that side of things, and he sees tiny houses for every positive thing that they could bring to a community, to an environment. And he's a very intelligent guy, and it's quite funny if you say, you know, he's a great speaker. And he talks about how homes could be in the future. And he also talks about the best way that to deal with the council from somebody who's spent his whole life in the council. And I think it's a really good insight. So he's exciting. And then, you know, of course, you can't forget Elle Payne. She is the co-founder of the Australian Tiny House Association. But she also lives tiny. She's got an incredible story, and she's been on a big journey. And I should imagine there's a few people in Australia that know more about tiny houses from top to bottom than she does. You know, she's always on stage giving insights into her journey as well. But most people, they might miss all of these talks that are up on stage because they've come around to come and see all the houses. And I always say to them, come at the end of the day. I think it's about 3 o'clock. Don't quote me on the exact time. but if you come about 3 o'clock, we do a Q&A session, and people can rock up and ask anything they like. And there's usually a panel of 3-4 people. And if we didn't have the answer, I could guarantee you that afterwards I could tap them on the shoulder and say, I know someone that you could get that answer from, you know, that's within the industry. So it's really helpful for those people that are really researching what they're doing. The talks are invaluable.
Yeah. And I think you do really cover a lot of the most common questions or common areas that people are asking about or would need to know about. So you mentioned the solar composting toilets. There's the grey water as well, linked to the composting toilets, the parking space. There's also tiny finance and insurance, right? And then there's the regulations. There's all these key areas, but I feel like going to an expo like that, you guys seem to cover it quite well. And speaking of, so you talked about the town planner there, and I know that you have dealings with different council members and just an awareness of what's happening just in a general sense and also in your local council and all of that. So I'm just curious, when it comes to the Tiny Homes Expos itself, have you had different council members actually want to come, other than, say, a town planner, but other members of council want to come and actually learn more about tiny homes, or maybe even see how there's a way to work together or some kind of collaboration? Or is there anything that you can share with us about that?
I can. It's a little bit comedic. I've had councils call me and say, oh, we'd like to come to your Tiny Home Expo. Can you give us, you know, an air on stage? We're going to do a talk, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, oh, great. And I think you're tiny home friendly. And they're like, yeah, we're tiny home friendly. That's great. And then I've come off the phone and gone, oh, this is fantastic. You know, the council's going to come and they're going to be able to give a great talk to all the people for their area. And this is going to be, you know, this is going to be great. And then they've sent me an email and attached their legislation. And it starts with, those are tiny houses above 60 square metres. They don't even know what a tiny house is. And I can tell you that the majority of councils I speak to are exactly the same. They don't know what a tiny house is. They also behave like it just popped up in their faces yesterday. But we all know that, you know, advocates have been advocating them for years and years and years. And so I get, I kind of phoned her back and I said, look, you're going to get stoned if you come up on my stage. I don't think my attendees are going to be very much at all. And I pointed out all the reasons why. One of them is that they had a, I think they called it an aesthetics sheet that you have to abide by, and it talks about 400 mil eaves on the roof of the tiny house. And, of course, that would make the tiny house illegal for towing if it was on wheels. And they had a couple of other things in there as well, which would make the off-grid elements particularly hard, that didn't need to be particularly hard. The good news is that 14, under my recommendation, 14 of those council members came to the Tiny Home Expo as just general attendees to learn something. And it's pretty much, I've had another phone call, I won't say which council, because they were just lovely, but it's a similar thing, that they're missing the beat of it. And that's why we don't have them up on stage. They actually don't know enough about tiny houses to be up on stage to give any information in a coherent way that would be accurate. And so at the minute I've been inviting them, councils, by the way, get free tickets. I go, come on in. I couldn't be more welcoming of them to come, but I would rather they came as attendees. I'd like them to come and see the quality of the builds. I'd like them to come and listen to some of the trauma that some people are going through trying to house themselves and how they're trying to make tiny houses their solution. I'd really like them to hear that. I'd like them to hear all the different answers that they get from councils, sometimes the same councils. So one council can give 1, 2, 3 different answers to one person that's trying to work out if they can have a tiny house on their land. Ultimately, this should lead to good advocacy. The councils have everything all laid out on a field. They have experts, builders. They can inspect them for safety themselves while they're there. They can get a really good idea of not only what the industry is like, but how people feel towards them. And, you know, we all know that, you know, when you have a council such as Mount Alexander coming out with what they've done and Esperance, you know, you're going to have a look at the comments that people make, even people that aren't going to live in tinies and aren't into tiny houses at all. They still give a nod and go, good move. That's fantastic. No one's gone, oh, my God, have you seen that council's going to allow tiny houses? No one ever says that. So it's good for their connection to their own community to acknowledge tiny houses and that people are interested in living in them and maybe renting them out, which would ease the rental crisis. So I think it's good all round, but I think councils should come and learn, not come and talk on my speaker
hall. Yeah, I think it's time for them to listen, huh? And I really, there's so many great things that you said there. I like that you pointed out the trauma aspect, because I say this a lot on the podcast, but just talking to different people offline too. It's like people are living in tents. There's small children as well on the streets, in cars, and who knows where else. By the time we wait for councils to do anything, like, these people are suffering, right? And it breaks my heart, and I know it would be the same for you. So I'm wondering, just with all of this stuff in mind that you just spoke about, and this might be a really loaded question, but let's see how we go. What do you feel from just your experience and what you're seeing and noticing? What's the disconnect there? Like, everyone has a different perspective, I think. I'm just from speaking to different people, but what's the disconnect? Like, why is it so hard to get all the different pieces together? You said that they've got, you know, everything that they need there. They've got builders, they can do inspections, they've got town planners and all the rest. What's the hold up?
it's normally, oh gosh, I mean, you know, without trouncing all over their heads, you know, the council, their government, you usually go so far with them, and then you get some guy in a suit with glasses on that's, you know, they went to university for a long time. And they will usually trounce it, and they'll trounce it based on the fact that they don't meet national construction codes, and then off we go down that line, you know. And I'm looking, I'm not sure if I'm meant to be looking at the, you know, at your house. I can see you in a tiny house, and I can tell you now that those stairs behind you don't meet the national construction code. And then off they go. They go down rabbit holes. And they also bring up stuff, and it really irks me. They bring up stuff. Often a really good argument for the council is that it will increase traffic, say, for instance, to a road. So I live on a road, and let's just say 3 people on this one road decide that they're going to have a tiny house in their back garden or, you know, on their acreage block. And they go, oh, that would increase traffic up and down the road, and that's an issue for council. And I think to myself, yeah, but I mean, they could also sleep on my couch. you can't stop them sleeping on the couch. That would increase traffic. So what are you going to say? Oh, people can't have people sleeping on the couch or in the loft or in the spare room. You know, if my parents want to come and stay at my house, which is another reason why people have tiny houses on their land, is so their parents can come and live with them. But they could also live within the house and just be a bit more cramped. So as far as I'm concerned, the traffic increase thing, which comes up at every council advocacy meeting I've ever been to, I mean, that can just go out the window. And another one we get a lot is the aesthetics. It's in the town planning that they must be fitting with the environment. And I usually answer that with, you've obviously not been to a tiny home expo. They are pretty ass. That, you know, they're not ugly things. You know, they're easy to make pretty. Most of them are on the back of land, not right at the front, on, you know, on the very verge for everyone to see as they're driving by. You know, there's a real thing there. So then what they'll throw it at is the fire safety. And there's a lot of other issues as well. You know, if you need an ambulance, where would they come to? You haven't got a proper address. Are you the, you know, are you number 11 Tiny Street, or are you 11 up the back of the tiny house Tiny Street? So there's little things like that. Those are all very overcomable. So the ones that are difficult to overcome are your fire safety, because, you know, this is Australia. We're always on fire, you know that. And also the environmental. The environmental department of the council, they really do have an issue with where your grey water goes. So then what you do is you speak to somebody who wants to go tiny, you mention grey water, and they go, no, I've got that all sorted out. I'm getting a compost toilet. And I go, no, you didn't come to our speaker hall. Your compost toilet is your black water. That's your sewerage. That's your wastewater. Very easy to overcome with most councils, believe it or not. And I see it on forums all the time, everybody banging on about how councils don't like, you know, composting toilets. It's not exactly true. That they don't have so much of an issue with. Grey water they have an issue with. And people need to really look into what they're going to do about their grey water and what the council will accept. And the answer I get most of the time is, grey water's okay, just what we put down the shower and what we put down the sink. And we're really nice eco people, so we're just going to water our plants with it. And there's your problem, because the way a council will look at you is the worst possible scenario. So when you talk to someone at the council about what you're putting down your shower and down your sink, they're thinking meth lab, the worst possible scenario. But you know that you use earth products that are good, and you're happy to put on their plants. You can't have that sprayed on the land. It can seep into the neighbours. It can cause problems with wildlife. And you really do have a problem there. You need to really think about that. Can you catch it and empty it, say, I wouldn't imagine it would be more than once every month, 2 months, into a proper, you know, disposal place, maybe at the main house, if there's a main house where your tiny house is. People who are trying to get onto vacant dwellings will find this very difficult to get past unless they set themselves up to go fully on grid, and then you need a DA application and get expensive, and they end up going, we might as well just build a normal sized house. It's not much more expensive. So that would explain why it's hard when people go, they want to buy land and put a tiny house on it. Those are your main blocks, that and fire safety. Coming up with a fire safety plan. If a fire came through, I've got this in place, that in place, fire breaks, etc. The council don't want to be responsible for letting people put their tiny houses in areas and they all end up, you know, cindered, and then they're all over a current affair saying what a terrible council they are. You can't kind of have it both ways. We have been to areas with our expo where we know that we're in an environment where the council aren't very tiny friendly. So if we were to get up on stage and say, we've spoken to such and such council, and, you know, you can have a tiny home for 30 days, which we all know is no good for people that are trying to live in them. You know, those are the ones on wheels, or, you know, you need a DA. However, I've had people come to that expo, talk to people and learn quite a bit about some of the advocacy work, and then reapproach that same local council that said no. And she'd spent a lot of money trying to get two tiny houses on vacant land through the council, and the council were just going, no, they're asking for a DA, and, of course, a tiny house on wheels particular, can't necessarily get through a DA, certainly not with any ease. However, she then called me and asked something about what one of the speakers has said and could I elaborate further, and I found her some legislation. She took that legislation back to that council and they completely 180'd, and she now has two tiny houses in an area where everybody says, but you can't have tiny houses here. And I know of several others. I'm using that one because that was even I said to her, lady, your chances are slim. And she's got two houses on vacant land in an area where a council doesn't allow tiny houses. So it's very difficult for us to get up on stage and go, you can't have tiny houses here, you can't have them there. Because it's so specific to your situation, the land, the zoning. And I'll be honest with you, it's unfortunate, but it's kind of your job to educate them. In that situation that I just told you about, we ended up educating that council and they went, well, I suppose when you put it like that, yeah, no, they are around. And she has physically got those houses on her land now as we speak. And she was at give-up stage when she came to the Tiny Home Expo.
Oh, that's such great news. And I guess that sort of highlights the inconsistencies, right? Like you can speak to the same council but get a different answer or a different result, or just different councils are enforcing different things. And then I get it. Like there is, look, I can, it's no small job to try and sort of come up with this all-encompassing, you know, these local laws, these state laws, these national laws. Like I can see it's such a huge job for something that is sort of taking on a life of its own, you know, like the how quickly tiny houses are growing. And I don't like to call it a movement because it feels like when you say a movement, it's like this trendy thing, but actually it's not. It's just becoming a part of it's crossing into mainstream now, right? It's even coming into sort of more popular culture too. But it's very heartening to hear of stories like that you just mentioned. And I know that there are several, but then on the other hand, you also hear about the other side of things where people are getting pushed out of their homes, their small homes, whether it's a caravan, and even on family property too. I saw something the other day around the Labor government reconsidering caravans of a pensioner living on his own family's property. I can't remember exact what location that was in, but I feel like there's a lot of like inconsistencies everywhere and it's just confusing and it's not clear. It can feel like an uphill battle, I think, sometimes, but I do like that there's also some positive things happening too. And I'm sure there's a lot of stuff happening that we don't even know that's happening.
I think behind the scenes from what I know, so by default, by running the expo, I've become an advocate. And I do speak to councils a lot and I write a lot of submissions. I don't do it in a really official capacity because firstly, I've got quite a potty mouth and I'm quite convinced that if you put me in a room with some people, you know, talking about, oh, but the traffic and the aesthetics, I would possibly end up punching somebody. I just get really annoyed and I would swear a lot in those meetings. So I don't think anybody wants me to get rid of them. However, by being a bit feisty, you know, I mean, I can give you another example. I spoke to a council that looked like they were going to change their legislation and then they decided not to anymore. And in their decision not to, they just pulled it from their website as if it never happened. And I was a bit cross about this because I'd kind of championed them as, you know, being tiny friendly, and I phoned them up and I had a long conversation with them. And I ended up by saying, well, look, I mean, it's really simple. You know, I just championed you as being a tiny house friendly council. So can I just now just get it out there and yell at the top of my lungs that obviously you're tiny unfriendly. And they didn't like that at all. It was really interesting. Yeah. Like instead of saying, yeah, knock yourself out, we don't want it. None of them, none of them. 577 councils. You go and have a look at all their websites and see if you can find me one website that says we don't want tiny houses. That tells you a lot. So they don't want to be tiny house unfriendly. There's a lot of elements around them. But in saying that, they also say, oh, it's because of state, and it's not. It is a council by council decision. And, you know, that they're constantly safeguarding themselves against the trouble that they perceive may happen if they go ahead with tiny houses. But when you have people like Esperance, and there's another one which I forget the name of. Do you remember there's another one in WA? It begins with C. It's not coming to me.
Ooh. I thought that there was one in WA, two in Victoria.
Two in
Surf WA. Coast and...
Yeah, is the second two? One, okay. I can't remember. It begins with C.
I can't remember.
I can't remember it.
Yeah.
And you've got Mount Esperance and very recently Surf Shire Council in Victoria. Yeah. New South Wales is state-driven. They don't necessarily, each council don't necessarily. And it's also more complicated in New South Wales because they've got some overriding. They've got a disaster management plan. And there's also a rural one as well, which can kind of override what a council might say about it. So that can be a bit complicated. And Queensland is very much council to council to council, and they can be, hugely different from one council to the next. It still is a big grey area, but with those few that I've mentioned that are going ahead, I feel there will be slowly, not quickly, unfortunately, a domino effect where they go, well, look, let's try and do what, say, for instance, Mount Alexander has done, or let's try and copy what, Esperance WA have done. And that's, of course, what I hope for. And I can tell you now, I would do a minimum of 4 submissions a day to councils and housing people and stuff like that. But it usually, like I say, it gets a bit feisty. I get my and when I type, I go, oh, I really shouldn't type that. And I have to delete stuff because I get angsty because I'm on the face of it. I went to Australia for an Adelaide Expo, used to people saying, oh, my God, the houses are so cute. It was like a therapy session. Those people had been bullied by their councils. And so I did after that expo. I was traumatised having to listen to their trauma. They were doing the right thing, and they had councils going, oh, we don't see why we need to explain all these legal things to you lay people.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
I had, they came with letters that they had from councils that I knew was incorrect information. And they were just literally just trying to get these people, off their back because they didn't want to deal with it. And so I collated as much evidence as I could, and I've done an official complaints investigation into those councils in South Australia that I feel have, for no reason, and I can only call it, the word is they bullied people, and those people were at my expo in tears, holding up their elderly mother that they were trying to house, people that were financially devastated, their lives were literally over, they just literally, that they would have been happy to get an approval on a box and just fall into it. That can be the state some people get to. People are queuing up to house themselves. The councils aren't letting them. And that's true. I see it at expos. People are queuing up to come and have a look at an alternative way of housing themselves and then getting home and finding up the council or speaking to a friend who naysays. And that's where they're stopping themselves. So some stories are really traumatising. And then I have wonderful stories like the lady that came to my my expo having never heard of a tiny house. And she's now got 2 tiny houses with her family of 6.
Oh, that's lovely.
And she's put them together in an L shape, and she's actually not that far from me. And she wrote me the most adorable email about how life-changing it was for her to discover it and to go through with it. And she says she wakes up every day secure. No, she's not in no rental. She owns those houses. She's owned the land on it. But she doesn't need to because she feels very comfortable where she is. And she said, you can't explain how what that does for people. And being part of that story is obviously one of the things that inspires me more so than anything.
Yeah, it makes it all worth it, doesn't it? And it is literally life-changing for a lot of people. I mean, also, I'm imagining that lady that you just mentioned, she's also able to be closer to family, right? You can have the family on the same property, but they also have their own independence, and then you can see each other and be there for each other when you want to as well. And I think, sadly, there's a lot of separation or just hard times with having families living, in far distances away from each other across the country, whatever it might be. for whatever, you know, circumstances, but for tiny houses to be this intergenerational living type scenario too is such another beautiful benefit of it. So
I had a guy call me and say, did I have any single level ones come into the expo, because he was thinking that maybe his parents could live in one. They were 90 something years old. He brought them to the expo, and that son bought them one of the most stunning houses, the most expensive one at the expo, I can assure you. And they moved into that shortly after the expo on their son's land. He had 5 acres, because he couldn't handle them trying to. They had acres and acres and acres of land, and all the kids had grown up in that house. And these people were really, really struggling to maintain that house, really struggling, but they didn't want to sell it because they've lived their whole lives there. And they didn't just want to sell it and go and move to some unit in an area that they don't know. So they're now living on the 5 acres with the son who can keep an eye on them in the bougiest, nicest tiny house you've ever seen in your life. And they're keeping the house, but it's going to be rented out and maintained and, you know, and kept nicely. And they're as happy as pie every time I think of them, because I met them. And every time I think of them, they were just darlings. And I think of them in that gorgeous house. They're just sitting there going, you know, and living out their last years, not worrying about the trees, the mowing, the creeks and everything else that they had going on their acreage property that was giving them trouble.
Yeah. I think it's that that quality of life as well in those later years is so important. So the fact that tiny houses has something, you know, to do with that in a way is so beautiful to hear. So, Faye, I feel like I could talk to you about all this stuff for like hours and hours, like probably the rest of the day. but I would love to just, you know, I want to be respectful of your time, and I'd love to just ask you a couple of more questions, if that's okay, sort of around practical things that maybe people can do to get involved. So, like the first thing, if someone, especially you're talking about tiny house advocacy, because I know that you do a lot of that, and probably things that we don't even know behind the scenes. Someone's listening to this and they're going, whether they live in a tiny house or not, or they're just really supportive of this space, what are a couple of things they can do to advocate for it? So would it be a matter of being in contact with their local council to try and sort of, you know, write these different letters that you're talking about? Or what are a few simple things that people can do tomorrow or, you know, in the near future?
Advocacy is a big word, and you think, it's obvious is to join voices together, and, you know, so that would be the ATHA. That's what the Australian Tiny House Association has been made for. Yeah. Never forget this. Advocacy is every person that ever phones up the council and goes, can I have a tiny house? Advocacy is every email that they ever receive going, why can't we have tiny houses? Advocacy is every submission made. Advocacy is every person that keeps knocking off those emails, because what you do is you do one and it's kind of like, I've done my bit, I've donated. Just keep going and keep asking the same question over and over again. Every phone call, every email that they get, they'll eventually have a meeting and go, somebody will put up their hand and go, look, I'm getting all these inquiries in tiny houses. Could we come up with a policy? That's how policies start, is when they get lots of inquiry. And I should imagine that the expo also helps with that, because people leave the expo enthusiastic and they run home and they phone the councils, and it boosts up how many phone calls and how many emails and how much contact they get. And eventually that leads them to think to themselves, well, we really need to come up with a policy, you know, and from there, hopefully people like the ATHA would come up with the actual guidelines that are best policy for that policy. But certainly every person that so much as makes a phone call makes all the difference.
Yeah, we've got to keep talking about it, huh, in all the different avenues and educating people. And it is, you're right, it is that, it reminds me of even just this supply and demand concept of, like, the more demand that there is, and we can think of demand as what you're talking about. We're simply inquiring about tiny homes. That's going to, you know, make that change, and that's going to start to put pressure on, or at least make people start to look at this more seriously and not think, oh, I'll just put in the too hard basket, or it's this thing that's, you know, it's a trend and it's going to go away in a few years or whatever. So I really love that. And that's something that all of us can do.
Absolutely.
You know,
that way. I think when you say the word, you know, advocate, People feel they've got to go and get a sign and go and, you know, go it around outside Canberra, not necessarily, yeah. No, just to your local council, yeah. And drive them mad. I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's her again.
We need people like you, though, in those places. Yeah. We need people like you, though, Faye. I feel like you would be such a great person to just plonk in the middle of Parliament or something. You know what I mean? Like, and I can just imagine your conversations in those rooms that you're talking about in those board meetings. I feel like we actually need people to just pipe up and, you know, be feisty. And I also would imagine it would be quite hilarious to be an observer and a fly on the wall in those types of meetings. But I think we need it, you know.
I'm in a very and your passion, because I can come up with stories. Yeah. And if I had answer to something, you know, I could phone up every builder in the country. And I've got, you know, I've being at those expos, I'm around a lot of information at my fingertips. So it's really quite privileged to be. Remember, you know, this is 365 days a year. It's my full-time job. So I'll get off of this call with you, and there's no doubt I'll speak to, you know, three builders and a wastewater management person today, and, you know, all different people. So it all adds up to me being able to be resourceful to speak in those kind of situations. And if I wasn't just a bit of a feisty person, I probably would do it more often. But I went to a meeting once and a councillor stood up and said these exact words. They said, "I just don't get it. Why would people want to buy a depreciating asset?" And I thought at that stage, I'm going to hit her. And I could not believe what came out of her mouth. You know, people are trying to house themselves. Yeah. It's not an appreciated asset. And I was furious, and I didn't like how I felt. And so advocacy for me, it's difficult for me because I get really passionate, maybe too passionate to, you know, to do it. So I do it, but I always go, you know, the ATHA are there for the changing of regulations.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put a link in the show notes at tinyhouseconversations.com for Atha as well. And just last question. So if someone wants to come to a tiny homes expo, or if maybe they're a new builder or a new business that hasn't ever come to an expo before, and maybe they're wanting to find out how they might be able to attend as an exhibitor or whatever that might be, where's the best place that they can come to online to do that, and how can they contact you?
Everything is really laid out on the website, tinyhomes with an S, expo.com.au. There's exhibitor information on there, contacts, my phone number, my email, which is rare, as you know, on websites. People don't usually have, you know, phone numbers and emails for better contact other people. Our frequently asked questions, we've really gone to town on those to thoroughly answer people's questions. You know, people want to know why, you know, the staggered entry, we realise it is a pain in the backside for some people, you know, the cost of the tickets, etc. Even that is explained on our frequently asked questions. I've seen events that have imploded because, you know, I don't want anyone turning up and queuing for hours and hours and hours to go and see a house, or being unable to get a seat in the speaker hall because we've got so many people coming to the events. And if we made it super easy for everyone, trust me, everybody would just rock up for a look, and it would literally implode. I've seen it happen. It's not that I think that it may happen. I've actually physically seen it happen. So we kind of control the event quite well to give people a good experience where they can come and learn and meet people if they want to, or they can just come and browse houses. If that's all they want to do, that's fine. But it's just in a more controlled way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you do it also intentionally. And just as we close out the conversation today, Faye, is there anything that you feel like we haven't covered, or you wanted to just round out the conversation with today based on what we've been speaking about?
I think we covered quite a bit, didn't we? Especially
we did.
Things that everybody wants to
know. Everyone wants to know.
Yeah, they don't ask about toilets so much anymore as they do about council. I think I'd like to round out that sometimes I know there's communities out there and charities out there. And I would like to round it out by saying I don't think they realise that I would love to get a call or an email from them. They don't have to be an exhibitor. We don't charge everybody thousands and thousands of dollars to come along. If I feel that they're a learning opportunity that is positive for the tiny house community, I will include them in the expo in the best way I can. The expo in itself, as far as I'm concerned, is a platform and it's for everyone. Do you know what I mean? And so I would love to have more of that kind of thing happening at the expo. I feel they're just scared to contact, it probably costs us a lot of money or something. Not necessarily at all. We just want to hear from you. And if you reach out to me, you nearly always get a reply.
Absolutely. And then also, if you're a council member listening to this and you want to come to the expo for some education,
send me an
reach
email.
Out to Faye as well.
I'll send them tickets, anything to get them going there and get the conversations going. You know,
that's what
it's going to take. And people sort of like say, why don't you invite all the councils? The problem I have is time finding the email for the right person to contact. If it goes to the reception lady, it's not going to go anywhere. We all know that. So sometimes I just say to people, send me, if you know someone in council who can make a difference, just send me their email and I'll reach out to them myself and say, look, I'd like you to come along and have a look. Finding each and every responsible person in 577 councils isn't easy.
I can see that there is sort of progress starting to happen. It is just at a very slow pace. But I think that the Tiny Homes Expos are such a huge part of what's helping educate people, what's helping people give hope, I feel too, and then also pushing this this space forward. So I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for what you do with the Tiny Homes Expos, for the tiny house community, and for being such a passionate, fiery, inspiring advocate, but also just a really open and warm and friendly person that just wants to do the right thing, that just cares about, all of this and people and getting roofs over heads. Thank you for all that you do in that space. And also thank you for your time today and coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Lucy. You're exactly the same back to you by living in a tiny house and doing the tiny podcast. Exactly the same thing. It's all about spreading out the news out there and, and giving people a platform with which to do it with, and you do exactly the same thing. So straight back at you, girl.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot. We got to work together, right? It's all about helping each other and collaborating. Cool. And I just appreciate being in the space with you. So thank you so much again. And if you're listening to us at home, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. Make sure you go check out everything that Faye and the Tiny Homes Expos are doing. If you want to go attend a Tiny Homes Expo, we'll put the links at tinyhouseconversations.com, and stay tuned every Thursday for new episodes of the podcast. See you next week. Thanks again for listening. And if you enjoyed the conversation today, you found it valuable and you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do that is to share the love. That way I can keep bringing you more tiny house conversations to help you on your own tiny journey. So here are three ways that you can support the podcast. Number one, if you have a friend or family member that you feel would benefit from hearing these conversations, feel free to share it with them, email them, text them, send them a telegram, do whatever you need to do to share it with them. Number two, if you hit the subscribe button, you'll know exactly when the next episode is live. And number three, if you head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and review. Thank you so much in advance. I appreciate you, and I'll see you in the next episode.